This morning we'll be in chapter 17 of Isaiah. You ready now? Okay. I'll begin to read a small chapter, 14 verses. Verse 1, the burden of Damascus, behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap. The cities of error are forsaken. They shall be for flocks which shall lie down, and none shall make them afraid. The fortress also shall cease from Ephraim, and the kingdom from Damascus, and the remnant of Syria. They shall be as the glory of the children of Israel, saith the Lord of hosts. And in that day it shall come to pass that the glory of Jacob shall be made thin, and the fatness of his flesh shall wax lean. And it shall be as when the harvest man gathers the corn and reaps the ears with his arm. It shall be as he that gathereth ears in the valley of Rephaim. Yet gleaning grapes shall be left in it, as the shaking of an olive tree, two or three berries in the top of the uttermost bough, four or five in the outmost fruitful branches thereof, saith the Lord of hosts. At that day shall a man look to his Maker, and his eyes shall have respect to the Holy One of Israel. And he shall not look to the altars of the works of his hands, neither shall respect that which his fingers have made, the groves or the images. In that day shall his strong cities be as the forsaken bough, the most branch which they left because of the children of Israel, and there shall be desolation. Because thou hast forgotten the God of your salvation, and hast not been mindful of the rock of your strength, therefore shalt thou plant pleasant plants, and shall set it with strange slips. In the day shall thou make thy plant to grow, in the morning shalt thou make thy seed to flourish. But the harvest shall be a heap in the day of grief and of desperate sorrow. Woe to the multitude of many people which make a noise like the noise of the seas, and to the rushing of the nations that make a rushing like the rushing of mighty waters. The nations shall rush like the rushing of many waters, but God shall rebuke them, and they shall flee afar off, and shall be chased as the chaff of the mountains before the wind, and like a rolling thing before the whirlwind. And behold, at evening tide trouble, and before the morning he is not. This is the portion of them that spoil us, and the lot of them that rob us. Okay? Now let's go back and see what it says. Note this. I've said it many times, but I got to say it again. I can't keep it on focus. That this is an internal work in us. This is something about our life, and it should be something that could be assimilated into our life. If we can't do that, what purpose would it be for us? Do nothing for us. So we got to realize, we got to internalize all these writings, understand what it's trying to do and change in me as an individual. And if I can't see it, I surely can't show it to you. Watchman Nee said, what you have not seen, you cannot show others. What you have not learned, you cannot teach others. What you have not, until you've healed yourself, you can't heal others. You've got to learn it's a personal thing. If I haven't seen it, I surely can't show it to anybody else. So this is something internal. We got to get this picture in our mind and put it where it belongs. And it should start out saying, not the burden of Damascus, but it's the utterance against Damascus. The utterance against Damascus. Damascus is the word that means what? Silent is the sackcloth weaver, speaking of death, or it could be humility, depending on which way you go in the context. Here it's talking about a bad thing. Sackcloth is talking about the death. It says, behold, Damascus is not taken away, but to be removed from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous pile of rubbish. Damascus was a great flourishing city in that day, wasn't it? And here comes the prophet and says, it's not going to be anything but a pile of rubbish. How many people you think really believed that? No one believed it. But you know what? The prophet has to say it. Does he have a choice? No. He has to say what he has to say. And whether people believe it or not is not any of his concern. His job was just to proclaim the word. And that's the way it is. No different today, because God's the same yesterday, today, and forever, isn't he? He's not changed. Only people and their ideas of God have changed. And sometimes it's not for the good. Okay, verse 2. The cities of Ar, and literally it means stripped bare. The cities stripped bare are forsaken. They shall be for flocks, which shall lie down, and none shall make them afraid. So animals are going to come. He's saying there's not going to be any habitation in these cities. No one's going to be there but animals, the beast. And that could be a good thing we're talking about. The only thing left is the beast. The good thing's taken away from it, right? The humans. Only thing left is the beast's nature. It's cast away into the rubbish heap. The fortress also shall cease from Ephraim. The word Ephraim means duality or a double ash heap. So the fortress shall also cease. So the protection from us, and see, even in our duality, God has protected us. He said, I'm going to remove that protection for a season. I'm going to remove it because it's time that the kingdom, and that's the rule and reign of Damascus, and the remnant of Syria, they shall be as the glory of the children of Israel, says the Lord. Did the glory of Israel disappear? Sure it did. Sure it did when they was in captivity. Right? When they were in captivity, did they have the glory of the Lord on them?
No.
They were enslaved in bondage, weren't they? And that's exactly where we are when we get in that duality. Ephraim always speaks of duality. And it says that the fortress shall cease from Ephraim, and the kingdom, and that word kingdom literally means the rule and the reign from Damascus. Damascus was the big center of everything to the world at that time. He said it's all going to fall away. And the remnant of Syria, which speaks of the prideful, they shall be as the glory of the children of Israel. It means they faded away. Israel lost their glory. They lost the Ark of the Covenant, didn't they? They lost their glory because they beheld their glory as an external thing. And that's what we got to see in ourselves. As long as we see God is something out there, we can lose it. But when you realize that God said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And he said that in the Old Testament, not the New, but it carries right on through. See, so we got to realize that this is an internal thing we're talking about, the glory of God. They saw their glory as external. What's the church do today? They see God as an external God. That's why they can lose their glory. We cannot lose our glory if we realize He is our glory inside of us. It's an internal thing. If we can get this picture inside of us, in our thinking process, you can never lose your glory. You can only think you lost it.
Well, doesn't that go back to what we said in the prior verse, was that sackcloth being dead,
yep,
being stripped bare,
yep,
He has to take all that away.
So that the glory can come forth. He's taken away all that fleshly understanding so that the only thing left is the mind of Christ. Absolute good thought process. And verse 4 says, in that day it shall come to pass that the glory of Jacob shall be oppressed. It says made thin, but should be oppressed. The glory of Jacob. Jacob was still speaking of the fleshly side, wasn't it? So Jacob shall be made thin or oppressed, and the fatness or the prosperity of his flesh shall wax lean. So he said, you know, if it means taking away all the prosperity you have in your life, so be it. Because the reward is much greater than anything that the flesh can give you. The reward of God in you. And it shall be, verse 5, as when the harvest man gathers the corn. First of all, anytime you see the word corn in a writing, you know it's not right. There was no corn in their culture at that day. There was only wheat and mummy wheat and barley, and there was three or four different grains, but there was no corn. That's King James literal understanding here. So when they gathered the grain, and he reaps the ears with his arms. Now, he wasn't talking about ears of corn like you might picture when you get that word corn stuck in your head. You go in the garden, pick out a bunch of ears of corn, lay them on your arm. That's not it. It's wheat. They cut the stalk down with the head on it, and they carry them in little shocks. He gathers it that way. And it shall be as he that gathers, and that word gathers ears, it should say gleans, the ears in the valley of Rephaim. Now, there's a story that goes with this valley of Rephaim that you have to understand so you can understand why he used this word, this analogy. He said, as he that gleans ears in the ears of grain in the valley of Ephraim, in Rephaim. Rephaim was a place that David repeatedly defeated the Philistines. Okay? It was a place of defeat. But in your life, he said, it's going to be in that place of defeat. And you got to gather and you got to glean. Now, is gleaning like going in the fields and beginning a big harvest?
No.
Gleaning is picking out one here, one there, just every little teeny bit you can find. It's like panning for gold. You're finding a little piece here, you're finding a little piece there. And it's a place of defeat if you don't keep your focus. See, David defeated the giants and these Philistines many times in this valley. But he had his focus, didn't he? And who was David a representative of? You, the Christ in you. It's Christ, but it's Christ in you. And if you don't keep your focus, what will happen? You'll be defeated. You just got to keep your eyes upon Him. And Paul said, keep your eyes upon Christ, the author and finisher of your faith. Right? Verse 6, it says, yet gleaning shall be left in it. And the word grapes shouldn't be there. That's an added word. He just said, gleaning shall be left in it. There's always going to be a gleaning in this valley of reverence, in this valley of defeat. There's always going to be enough. What was the gleaning left for? For the poor people. There was always something left for the poor. You always left the gleaning in the corner of your fields. You left the few in the highest boughs on the branches and everything for the poor people to come along and get. Okay? So God is going to provide enough substance for us to survive, isn't He? Always. And it's always going to be the remnant's going to come around and hunt them little remnants out. See? Hunt them little pieces of gleaning here and there. They're going to hunt them out of the Scriptures. He says, as the shaking of an olive tree, two or three berries. What's two or three represent?
Witness.
A witness. He said there's always going to be a witness in the top of the tree, the uppermost bough. You know what that speaks up? The uppermost bough of a tree? It's the uppermost highest realm. How many realms are there?
Three.
Okay. First day, second day, third day. You know, Passover, Pentecost, Tabernacles. And just like Isaiah said, there's a highway or a higher way where the lion can't walk and the vultures can't fly. That's being seated in the heavenlies. That's what we've got to come to. We've got to get in our understanding. We're not going someplace. We're releasing something within us. And it says four or five, and cross out the word outmost, but just say four or five fruitful branches thereof. There's always going to be a few in those outer branches, the outer reaches, the uppermost part. That's speaking of tabernacles. And there's always going to be a little bit of gleaning there, enough to sustain you. It's just like finding that little nugget here and there through the Scriptures. There's always going to be some there. Even though He let somebody translate this and hide the Scriptures, hide the truth in it, our job is to search it out and find out what's said. Proverbs 25:2. It's the glory of God to conceal the Word, and the honor of kings is to search out the Word. And we're called to be a nation of kings and priests unto our God. So our job is to search out and find this truth. And if I don't get free, how can I help anyone else get free? So your first mission is to submit to the Spirit of God in you so you can be free, so you can help and assist someone else to get free. If I'm sitting in jail, how am I going to help anybody break out of jail? If I'm outside, I can do a lot of things, can't I? I can help you get out if I'm out. But if I'm in the same place you are, well, how can I help you? I can't do it. Okay?
You only give what you have.
That's right. If I don't possess it, I can't give it, can I? Okay. Verse 7. At that day, and what day is that? The day of the Lord. It's right now. Is that exactly right? A man. That word man is the word in the Hebrew, Adam. In that day shall Adam look to his maker. Notice that word maker's big capital letter. Mine is. Is yours?
Yeah.
It's talking about God. He's going to look to his God. When he starts finding that God is the substance, that God has provided a way for him to come through all this hell we go through, all this turmoil we go through, He's always provided and laid something out there. It's like you see these people on TV. They're super agents, and they go hide identities and money and weapons and food and stuff. And no matter where they go in the world, they can always get to something to keep them going, you know. And that's the way God has set us up. He's provided something to always be there at the time we need it. I think it's neat. Man just copies off of God's ideas and say they're theirs, but they're not. They're His to start with. He had the original plan. Like Ford says, Ford has a better idea. No, they don't. They just copied something off somebody else. And his eyes shall have respect to the Holy One of Israel. So it says his vision is going to change, and it's going to focus upon God. When you realize that God has provided everything in your life for a purpose, and you know this, you're going to start to look to God and have respect to the Holy One of Israel. And he shall not look to the altars, and that's saying you. You will not look to the altars and the works of your hands. That's the religious systems. All the external systems. And every church system of the day is an external system. God is an internal God. So it won't be about the altars and the works of your hands. Neither shall have respect that which his fingers have made, either the groves or the images, the trees that they plant in these high places, or the images they've carved out or made. And see, an image doesn't necessarily have to be an idol that you sit and work on. An idol is an image which is in your mind. Idols can be anything in your mind that you think of too much about. You see what I mean? It could be your family, your friends, your possessions. It could be anything. It's more important than God. And God should be number one. And according to his word, he says, I'm a jealous God. I'll have no other gods before me. Okay? So I wouldn't want, if I really cared about my wife, would I put her before God? Because God's real good about crushing idols. If I love my wife, where I got to put her?
Second
place. See? God number one, her number two. And she's got to do the same. If she loves me, she can't put me first because I'm going to be in trouble if she does. Because I'm the thing between her and God. And guess what? That's the thing that's liable to get crushed to dust. See? So if I love her, I got to put her in the right position. Simple as that. God's first. Okay, verse 9. In that day shall his strong cities be as a forsaken bow, and it should say a forest or a grove, and an uppermost branch which they left because of the children of Israel, and there shall be desolation. He said, I'm going to provide enough for you to get through. There's going to be a few berries on the upper branches and out way out on the ends where we can't get them without a lot of work. But the poor people work for a little bit, won't they, to survive. When you're hungry, you'll do a lot of things. He said, and they left there because of the children of Israel. Verse 10, because you have forgotten the God of your salvation. That word salvation is not correct. It's the God of your deliverance. You have forgot about the God who delivered you. How many times did Israel ask for God to deliver them?
Every time they got in
the jam. Constantly. Okay?
No different than today.
No different. Every time you get in the jam, they run and ask God to forgive them, to help us, save us, deliver us. But because you have forgotten, and that's the reason that this happens, you have forgotten the God of your deliverance and have not been mindful of the rock of your defense, not strength, but the rock of your defense. Therefore shalt thou plant pleasant plants and shall set it or sow it with what? Strange slips or strange prunings. When I was a kid, they used to say, go out there and get a slip off this plant and bring it in. They put it under a jar and stick it on the ground, just stick it in the ground, and you'd make it like a hothouse, a jar over top, and they'd call them slips. I don't know if you all know what that is or not. When they cut pruned little pieces of branches off a rose or something, they call it slips. So it's really just prunings. Okay, so he said, all that's going to be done because you've forgotten where your deliverance comes from and the rock of your defense. And who is the rock? Christ is the rock. Okay. 1 Corinthians 11. He is the rock that followed them through the desert, and it was a rock of their defense. It was Christ. Verse 11 goes on to say, the day that thou shalt make thy plant, in the day you shall make your plantings to grow, and in the morning you shall make your seed to flourish, but the harvest shall be a heap in the day of grief and of desperate sorrow. There's the result of forgetting God. See, the reason, because you've forgotten God, and you try to do your own thing. I just talked with a man last night, and he said, you know, his brother's sick, and he was trying, and God told him he was going to take him, and he said, oh God, you can't. You know, he tried to get in between it, and now the guy's kind of gotten a little better, and he's turned on him and just eat him up, and he was the one that did everything to save his life and his family, and he's turned on him. And I said, well, that sounds like an Ishmael, don't it? And we've all got Ishmaels in our life somewhere. That's just like them little Babylonian babies. We've got to get them out. Yeah. We can't have Ishmaels running around today. Verse 12, woe. The little word woe, whenever you see woe, it means pain, grief, and suffering. So, woe to the multitude of many people which make a noise like a noise of the seas. What does the sea represent?
Humanity.
So, sounds like everybody out there today, don't it? Whining and crying and murmuring. That's the sea. Which make a noise like the noise of the sea. And to the rushing of nations, a rushing like the rushing of mighty waters. It's talking about humanity, always in a hurry, never wanting to slow down, doing it their way. You know, they can't wait upon God, can they? God may not be right this time. He may have forgot something, see? They don't trust him. They have no patience. and they just want to hurry up and get into everything. I had a friend that was a pastor and told me, he said, when we built this place, they said, well, it's okay this way, but, you know, I was telling them we have to be patient in things and get things done right. And he said, I tell my people, do something even if it's wrong. Really? Now, why in the world would you do that? Well, you can't just sit around. You can't be idle. I said, really? I said, you're going to do something wrong, so you have to go back and correct that before you can ever think about getting anything right. I said, that sounds like a whole lot of confusion to me. He said, well, that's the way I do it. And I said, well, you just have fun doing what you're doing, because I ain't going that way. I'm not going that way at all. I'm not in a hurry. I'm surely not going to tell somebody to do something wrong.
Creating a lot of hardship.
For everybody. For everybody. And while he was at it, he was teaching them karate, how to beat each other's brains out in the church. Free karate class, self-defense. Okay. That's a funny thing I see all the time. I see these people praying before a football game, God, give me the strength to knock that guy's brains out so I can win. And that guy over there saying in the back of my name, God, give me the strength to knock that guy's brains out, you know. God's no respecter of persons, so I don't think that works, does it? You think it's more for a show than for reality? It's a joke. Verse 13, the nations shall rush like the rushing of many waters. Yep. That's the imaginations, image of nations. Imaginations, the mind will rush like the rushing of many waters. It'll rush just like humanity. But God shall what? Who's going to rebuke them?
God.
God is.
What's the scripture says, I'll come in like a flood?
It's in Isaiah. If they raise up a standard against them, if they come in like a flood, God shall raise up a standard against them. It's in Isaiah. Yeah, same principle. Same principle. And they shall flee afar off, and shall be chased as the chaff of the mountains before the wind, and like a rolling thing before the wind. Now, first of all, you got to get the picture straight. Everybody thinks when he says he's going to run them off, like shall rebuke them, everybody, first thing he thinks, what do they think of? Who's getting rebuked? Everybody thinks bad people, don't they? That's not what he's talking about. He's rebuking the bad things in my mind. Proverbs 2:20-21 says, the righteous shall never be removed from the earth, and the wicked shall not inhabit the earth, and the transgressors shall be rooted out of it. It's not about classes of people. We've got to get our minds straight. It's not about, when he says the wicked shall not inhabit the earth, he's talking about the wickedness inside of me. My thinking process will not inhabit this earth. It's not about wicked people. We've got to get that picture out of our mind. That's some of them pictures that the church has drawn for us.
It's carnal thinking.
It's carnal thinking. Came from the heart of man. It's nothing to do with people. And this is a present. This is a promise that God give us. In Exodus 20, when he had the Ten Commandments, when he said, thou shalt not steal. See, it's the way it's interpreted. It's a hard thing. It's a law, right? The Ten Commandments. It's ten promises. It's ten prophetic utterances. When I get done changing your heart, you won't steal. You won't want to steal. You won't want to cheat nobody. You won't want to covet nobody else's property. You don't want to commit adultery or murder, anything. Because I'm going to change your heart. And how could you even think of it then? Because the old heart's taken out, the old mind, the old thought process, and a new one placed in. God's not going to give you a new thought process and leave the old one in there. Hello? Woody? That's duality, and he said duality. You're double-minded, you're messed up in everything, see? Right?
Yep. God's definitely faithful.
He's faithful to do what he said. He said he's going to make sure you ain't going to do it. What do I got to worry about then? See, just do what we're supposed to be doing. Just do what he tells us to do. So when he's talking about the mountains here, he said the chaff of the mountains. Now, mountains is plural, right? Now, it's plural for a reason. How many mountains are in Jerusalem?
Three.
That represents what? Dust, sand, stars, Passover, Pentecost, tabernacles. The dust, sand, stars. You know, the three covenants, the Abrahamic covenants. Okay, so he made the three covenants. He said, this wind, these thoughts, the rushing, the imaginations shall rush like the rushing of many waters. These imaginations in your mind, these wrong thought processes. But God shall rebuke them, right? God's going to take them out of your mind, and they shall flee afar off and be chased as the chaff of the mountains before the wind. What can the wind do to that chaff? What is the wind? The Spirit of God. So the Spirit of God is going to take care of removing all these thought processes in our head that are wrong. Ain't nobody shouting yet? Hey, that's a promise to you. That's not a maybe. When you listen to what God says, he don't say if. He doesn't do conditionals. See? He doesn't say he didn't die that you might have life. He died that you possess life. There's no might in there. And all these mights and maybes that the scriptures is in the scriptures is put on there by man. God wasn't unsure about anything he said. When he said it, he meant what he said, and he said what he meant. And all these extra words, you've got to take them out of there because they'll just confuse you. And like a rolling thing, or like the dust, it should say dust, before the whirlwind. And it's really a tornado. What does a tornado do with dust? Where does it take it to? A far off, doesn't it? It can pick up dust here and put it clear across the United States or over the other side of the world. Puts it up in them jet streams, you don't know where it's going to when it gets up. And don't care. As long as the dust is gone, because the dust is the lowest realm there is.
There ain't going to be no serpent's food left, huh?
No serpent's food. And that's what the dust is serpent food. If there is no longer serpent food, what would happen to the serpent?
They'll die.
Ah, there it is. If the spirit does away with all the food, the substance for the, and the dust is the serpent food, right? If you get rid of all the dust, then what happens to the serpent? He's got to die. It's got to die. It's all there.
All those casts and stuff in our life is
removing the dust.
We'll be flat.
We'll be moving all that dust away, won't we?
Yeah, because all those little bleeps and stuff just going to disappear.
That's a fact. And look what it says in the 14th verse. And behold, at evening, trouble. Evening. Evening is a time when the sun is setting and getting darker, right? And before the morning, he is not. What is not? That serpent. The serpent's no more. It's gone before the morning. When the day star rises in your heart, what could the serpent have to do with you any longer? See, the dust has already blown away. It's time to start growing now. That morning is the Christ, okay? This is the portion of them that spoil, or the ones that spoil us, and the lot of them that the one that robs us. So the destiny of the one that robs us is just a carnal mind. It's not a person. It's my own thinking process. The thing that accuses me every day, the accuser of the brethren, is this thing right here. Every day I get up, just like you said a while ago, Dwayne, you said, I've heard it in my head, I mean, you'll never make it, you're no good, blah, 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 all these things you hear. Where do they come from, external or internal? See, that's the one that's got to go. And his promise was, I'm going to remove the wicked from the earth. Hello. Don't fit the rapture theory, does it? Rapture theory says the good's got to go. Well, somebody twisted something.
Thank God for earthquakes.
Thank God for the earthquakes and the tornadoes and hurricanes. They'll blow away all the dust. There's a purpose. And believe me, when you have that battle of Armageddon and that earthquake it talks about in Revelation, it talks about the earthquake. And said it'll be greater than any on the earth or in the earth. Right there. Going to be a lot of shaking. Any questions?